At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
You don't produce a Kieran Kilkenny or an Oisín Mullen. You don't produce them overnight. They take time, takes a lot of work, massive loss for his club, but he's made for professional sport.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
Good afternoon, folks. You're very welcome along to episode 29 of the Football Pod with Paddy and Andy. The two lads are here. The two of them are being held together. Andy Moran has hit the wall, and Paddy Andrews has just emerged from... Where have you come from, Paddy?
From your previous house.
And you're eating an apple. The two boys are very, very busy.
It's not easy at the top, Tommy. Not easy.
I know.
Moran on his World Book tour in London for the weekend. You look fresh for a man that's been over there for a couple of days, like, I must say.
Yeah, I had to drive to Dublin today too, Paddy. It was a tough day now.
6:30 in the morning, Andy Moran headed off to Dublin this morning. When did you land back from London?
Yesterday evening. It was fine. Okay. It was fine. I had quite nice. Our guest from last week, Barry Sola, brought us out for a nice meal on Saturday night.
It was quiet.
Yeah, it was quiet. Oh, after Thursday, Friday, it needed to be, but it was a nice meal on Saturday night. So I wouldn't say I was recovered, but I'm not bad.
Do you enjoy the football?
Yeah, it was good. It was good. Athletically, lads. Do you know the way we were talking about athletes and it's kind of in your head then away from it? Like, the athletic form of some of them boys is just Joel Linton, animal of a man. You know, there's just a few of them that are just, like, you nearly think they were athletes before they were footballers. You know, that sort of way. So it was cool to see that kind of it. I've been there a good few times, but... Newcastle are poor team. So
they're going to need a serious few quid, which they obviously have in January, to try and sort that out. But it's funny you say that, Andy. Anytime I go watching soccer, it's the speed that I always think stands out.
Yep.
Guys over, they are electric. Over 5 yards. How they get up to top speed so quick. And you're just thinking, imagine you had that yourself.
Saint Maximum, how do you pronounce his name?
I'm a big fan of his.
Like, he was, as always,
over, like, there was one stage, just he was left inside the box, he didn't do much in the game, and he just, boom, he just moved, and he stole about 3 yards and just got across. But you're right, the pace of them.
Wouldn't have a hope. Wouldn't have a hope.
It's unbelievable. What's the new left back for Arsenal? What's the name? Just forget his name.
Oh, Nuno Tavares.
I've never seen anything like him, lads. I've never seen anything like him to run. I'm telling you that now. I've never seen anything like him on a football.
Donny Vaughan in the mid noughties.
I like Donny Vaughan, believe me, but I'm not sure I can even give him that. This fellow was just, I've never seen anything like him. He was like, he had about 6 shots. No, none of them hit the target. But he had about 6 shots.
God loves a tryer.
He sounds like a differential to slip into somebody's fancy football team if anyone's listening in. Andy Moran has been scouting at the Emirates this weekend.
I'm not sure about his assists and his score now, but he's running a bit.
All the stick you give me and Moran there's me studying and meeting priests over the weekend doing the whole nine yards. And Moran's on a session for 3 nights in London.
The absolute opposite. The roles reversed this weekend. Paddy, you're flat out with the Masters. And is it 8 days to the wedding, yourself and Dora? Is it the 7th?
No, I have an exam on the 7th.
Oh,
Saturday week.
Okay.
To be honest, it's great because I haven't had time to think about it. Work and the Masters is keeping me going. So I've got all that sorted in the next week, and then the wedding is Saturday week.
Fantastic. Okay.
So what could possibly go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong?
I'm waiting for a government announcement now in the next couple of days, cutting numbers to 50. Put the icing on it, but as of now we're ticking along. So loads going on, obviously. But
I didn't realise you were referring to that. Okay, right.
Yeah.
The highlight of the Arsenal game, lads, was the Arsenal fans started singing it. The Newcastle fans, they started saying, you're rich and you're shit, like, right? So the Newcastle fans responded with, we're rich and we're shit.
They're just delighted, aren't they? They don't care. They just want anything after Mike Ashley, they're happy out.
Yeah, they sang for 95 minutes. It was amazing.
They had a good day as well, then.
I apologise for any intermittent barking. Bailey's having a bad night. He's been causing chaos. I was on News Talk with Joe earlier, and I'll be able to edit this, but I can't edit what happened with Joe earlier on. Bailey.
Feeding the poor fella.
I swear to God, I've been feeding him. I made a mistake.
Give him an old pouch there or something to keep him happy.
I left him a treat map where he's supposed to figure it all out, and I mistimed it, so he figured it out too quickly. Anyways, lads, the club at the weekend. Can we talk a little bit about that? I have a question for you.
Go for it.
Who was the greatest cluster of brothers you ever come up against? And a cluster means more than two in the club scene. Because at the weekend, we obviously saw Lockmore Castellini in the form of Graz. And I was watching Ballygunner and the Mahonies at the weekend. Unbelievable stuff. Four Mahonies. I don't know how many McGraths there are, but
the McGrath story is phenomenal. Gee, it's
unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Toughest cluster of brothers in Dublin. See, we only get out of Dublin once in 2011. And
you obviously had the Brogans, so you would have had a couple of spells where you had Paul Allen and Bernard up against you.
Three lads, yeah. We actually bet them in the championship final in 2011 that year. So, and
they're, did you? Yeah. And they haven't won a final, have they?
That Plunkett's team lost, I think, three finals, and they were in semi-finals and stuff. And the big thing with us was they're literally our next door neighbours as well. Even before Castle Lock came on the scene, Bridgetts and Plunkett's would have had a big rivalry. A lot of the guys would have been in school together in St. Declan's down on the Neffin Road. But there was Alan Bernard and Paul, would have been Plunkett's. Crokes obviously had the O'Carrolls, Rory and Ross. I think I marked both of them in the same match a couple of times. Crokes were big rivals of ours at that time as well. Who else? Not many more in Dublin that spring to mind.
Okay.
I always think it's probably more of a country thing, but they're definitely, the Rogans are probably the most high profile. And then the O'Carrolls definitely were Crokes were. We're heavy going, marking it to those two lads as well, now at their peak as well. Yeah,
yeah. Well, like Mother Nyakta, obviously, Keane Mackey was talking about it, the McGivney,
wasn't it? Yeah.
And the Mulligans. Yeah. And like they're only half apart in small parts. Like Lockmore Castellini, there's 1,000 people living there. It's so small. And one of the big things is like in Kilmacud's double, the hurling and the football this year, there's only one player who started both. There's 10.
Super club, yeah. They're like Newcastle.
Oh, stop. There's 10 who started both for Lockmore Castellini and 14 overall who played in both finals. And I think there's another who was injured and missed. So 15, 16 that are involved in both. Like, so it's unbelievable. Yeah. Paddy's after saying there, it's a culty thing. Are you going to prove it right?
I did. Like, see, you're putting words in my mouth.
I know.
Typical media stuff. Off the ball. Look at them.
I can definitely prove it right. Yeah, I've definitely proven right. I heard a story today that someone, it was Nathan actually, the club. Is he Jude's?
Oh, he's now, yeah.
I said, how many under 8 boys would you have? And he said, 65. I coach our under 7s and we've 22 and 11 of them are girls or 11 of them are boys, you know? So I think we just need to keep reproducing in families. We just need bigger families. So
that's your job, Andy. I can't help you there.
I'm trying like hell. But in Mayo, like the Mortimers, obviously, you had Trevor, Connor, and Kenneth who won two All-Stars in the 90s.
Yeah.
The O'Connors, obviously, with they had four. They had Porrick, Rory, Dermot and Killian all on the team, all starting. And they won a few county titles together. In Ballina in 2005, you had the Bradys, Ger Leem and David.
There was a third. I only know Ger and David.
I didn't know there was four O'Connors then.
Leem was... Rory works for Sky, actually. Works for Sky, so a really good left half-back. He played for Mayo for a bit, and Porrick played underage for Mayo as well. So you have the Bradys. Leem was the free-taker. He was probably nearly the main fella. So it was Kilmurry of Brick and played them in the semi-final that year. A good friend of mine, ladies football manager Evan Talty.
Go on, give him a good shout out there.
He got sent off.
He's flagging the stuff on Twitter.
It looks quality.
I've got a plug.
It wouldn't be a football pod without it. Let's see it, Andy. What is it? Go on, give it a plug.
How do you let this man away with it?
Do you know why, Paddy? Because we're open for sponsorship for season two of the football pod. I'm making a pitch right now.
I was about to slag Talty, not give him a plug, but Talty got sent off for elbowing Liam Brady in semi-final. So not taking him now. So he, it was them. But I think the most famous probably are the boys up in Cross, aren't they? The Kernans.
Yeah.
Four of them. And they won multiple. Who were they? Stephen, Tony, Patrick, Aaron, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The Patrick, the fullback, good player.
We're definitely missing it. I should have been more prepared. We're definitely missing a load of brothers. There's going to be a heap of people getting in touch on the same.
I'm sure you have a few around Ballanderry and a few like that. But I think the Kernans in... They have the most impressive medal, all right. How many guys play for Slochneil? How many of the McCaigs play for Slochneil? Is it only the two or three?
Slochneil would have had the... Was Slochneil in the hurling as well? Did that run?
They were the same.
There's a few outstanding.
Isn't it funny that you look at Slochneil having that run and Crokes? I was surprised that Crokes only had one player on both squads.
Yeah.
They've done the double. I can't remember many teams doing the double in Dublin, certainly recently in my time.
No.
So a phenomenal achievement for them, and they go close in both the provincial campaigns as well. So
it's unbelievable. Like Lochmore Castellani did it for the first time in 2013. That was the first Tipperary club to ever do it. Cracklow did it in Clare in 2014.
Our buddy Mr. Collins was telling us about it.
Yeah,
so it's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. We had 8 set of brothers, I think, when we won a county title in 12, I think, but they were all twos. There was no three or four.
You had 8 sets of brothers,
I think so. Yeah,
can you reel them after?
No, I couldn't. Baz and Mike.
He's not right. He's still a bit shook. Baz and Mike Solan,
Gary, Rory Conmed, the Drakes. Yeah, there was a good few of them like that. So there was, I think there was an uncle and nephew, Barry Regan, Aaron Lynch. And then there was
very important. Yeah, I was at Ballygunner, Bally A in the hurling. I'm not a hurling man, but I was at it. And the four Mahonies were unbelievable. Philip, back from a leg break, I think 10 weeks ago. Porrick, I think, did his cruciate last year, and he's just back recently. And then they got the two younger brothers as well, who are lightning. And then it turns out that most of the coaching staff are their uncles. So like, it's unbelievable, like the connection in that club. Yeah. So let's do one last thing on the club football, lads. Rory Grugan, the Armagh footballer, put this out there in the last couple of weeks. He's been talking about it for quite a bit, actually. He tweeted that he's going to put it to the Armagh Convention. He's bringing it to his as part of his club. Speaking of the power of Twitter, our club is bringing a motion to the Armagh Convention to move club league games to either a Friday or Saturday night for the 2022 season and beyond. Quick question, is that a good idea or a bad idea in your experience? For me, it'd be a no-brainer. No more Sunday morning games.
In what way?
Just that your games are there and they're being played at the weekends.
Right, remember now you're living in Clare, you're not living in Meath.
No, and I've never actually lived at home and played football. I've always travelled back.
Okay, so it's Friday evening, you're coming out of Dublin, you're coming to Mayo, and there's a crash in the M50. It's a championship game. You need to be there for 7 o'clock game starting at 8 o'clock.
He's talking about club league games. He's not talking about championship. Club league games. Now, that's the only thing. And like,
look, I think we've touched on this, and we spoke to some high profile people who feel it. As a player, you want to be able to enjoy the weekend and have the balance around that. And you're preaching to the choir here. I agree with that, but there are issues around logistics around that, particularly Friday evening games. Look, if it's just league games on a trial basis, that's fine. But Andy's going to hit the nail on the head. We're probably bringing this maybe in inter-county scenes where there are massive games, and it's probably not feasible to do that where there's travel involved. Say logistically, if something happens, it's harder to get across. But look, I think it's good to have those discussions, and if there's buy-in from the county board and players, trial it on a league basis, and if it works and all the stakeholders are happy with it, then absolutely, because that will lead into championship games. And this is the type of stuff we were talking about with Congress. It takes someone to kind of take the plunge and trial it and see it. And if it's Armagh and it goes off without a hitch, then imagine every county board is going to start looking at it as well. And that's, for change to happen, there needs to be a trailblazer. It needs to be trialed. And if that works in Armagh, it'd be great. and the players are happy with it.
Tommy, I would just say for club league games, I'd actually be all in favour for it.
Yeah, it is club league games. That's what it is. I don't know if it's a championship, but it is club league games.
No, for club championship, I wouldn't be. And just for the, like, no, it's not that I wouldn't be. I think every county board needs to do that on an individual basis.
Yeah, and I understand that completely, especially in a county like Mayo. But like, just to say that Tyrone have done it this year for 2021, for the most part, for their summer games. We obviously had Conor McKenna on the pod a couple of weeks ago saying, God, Bailey.
Conor McKenna didn't want to play any league games.
He didn't want to play any league games for the last 8 weeks. But down, Benny Coulter got in touch with Rory Grugan, and he said that, unbelievable, the clubs are still playing on a Sunday. Friday nights and down, this 20 years, so good. Weekends free generally, and a great atmosphere for Friday night league matches. So that's Benny Coulter getting in touch
But I agree with that. The only issue I have is that if it works well for the league, right? So this year for our championship game, the game you came down to tell me, we played on Friday evening.
That was great.
It was unreal, right? But we had at least, right? So I hire a few of the boys anyway. So I had to give them the whole day off. They don't get paid for that day. We had teachers that have three course days a year that literally had to take a course day on the Friday to make sure that they don't get caught in traffic. Like, you can imagine working until three, half three, coming down the road, stuck in traffic. You're there till 6 o'clock and you're trying to play your championship. Like, that was the game that mattered for us this year. And you're trying to play that then on a Friday evening. Like, I know it sounds silly, like, because you're never going to get reimbursement for playing club, like, but unless you're willing to look after people for work in a county like Mayo, Galway, even the likes of the Leitrim where I am now, I find it hard to know how you can actually do it.
I
for championship games, for championship games, for a league game. If you missed an odd league game, I'd say a few boys would be happy enough to.
Look at traffic again, Gaffer. You won't believe it.
But the week before that, Tommy, I swear to God, the week before that game was fixed, we were playing Ball in the second round of the group stage. And so we were training on the Friday night, just meeting up, doing a bit of tactics, walkthroughs and stuff like that. And it was supposed to start at 7:30. And we didn't get started until 9:15. Because it was an accident on the M50. And boys were just caught. So what do you do?
The M50 is a shambles, no matter where you're going.
So like, it was just like, what do you do in that situation, you know?
Yeah, no, I completely get where you're coming from, 100%. But I think for league games, absolutely. And I think a lot of people will be behind it, 100%.
I agree, now,
Andy, can we talk Colin Boyle? Because this broke after last week's pod broke. Colin Boyle has retired from Intercounty from Mayo. Can you talk to us about Colin Boyle?
Still waiting for the big statement out of Boyler. No, it won't come either, I wouldn't say. So, no, just a great individual, great person, good teammate, great teammate. The story about Boyler, it's funny, and it's one of the bits that we talked about before. But Boyler was a really good minor, came into the senior squad, played in 2008 against Galway, got taken off at half time, and then that winter got dropped from the whole squad, just got dropped off the squad, went away, kind of fought his way back into the squad, put on 7-8 kilos of muscle. Got his way back into the squad on a good club run with his club in 2011, and then all of a sudden won 4 All-Stars.
Why was he dropped at that time? What was it? What, physically, when you need to go away and bulk up, or did he just kind of, or was there a specific reason given, or just took him upon himself to go and do that?
Like? No, I remember he got taken off against Galway. What he was, Paddy, when he was a young fella in college with us. He was a really tenacious halfback, going in, winning breaks. So, but the game
like that moved, all the time, just in college.
but the game moved a tiny bit in that period. It just moved a tiny bit more physically with the Corks and that. He was small and light. I think he had a bad game. He got sent off actually in 2007, the 21s. Got taken off in 2008 in that championship, and then got dropped that winter. And it looked like for all his career was over. But himself, Mickey Conroy went away, trained themselves into an oblivion. Like, he came back, he was a different unit altogether. Got to the All-Ireland Club Final with his club intermediate, and then Horn brought him back in, and then he was just a revelation. The rest is history. Then after that, he became kind of the unique player of that generation with Lee and, I suppose, Johnny Vaughan from that.
I think I marked him in a couple of finals. You 13, I think I was marking him. Yeah, I was out for around half.
Yeah, you were a big. You were actually a big problem because you wouldn't know where you'd end up, to be honest.
Yeah. I didn't know where I was going myself. After
you could end up.
I think literally the morning of that final, or the day before, maybe 13, my first one. I was just going. Jim was like, "We'll play out centre forward for this game," and I was like, "What?" I was like, and I ended up out there, and it was on, I think it was on Colin in that final. I must look back on it, yeah. But definitely, like for us, he was just a pain. Yeah. You know, it's a lot of the Mayo backs tend to be. You're just in your face, brilliant tackler.
I loved watching him play.
Yeah.
Like the blocks, the flying blocks.
Was that on Twitter last week? Someone put up on Sligo.
Sligo, yeah.
Like, though, it was like superstar stuff.
Yeah,
unbelievable. But he had a brilliant run, and that's, I didn't realise it. It's funny, isn't it, how many players have gone through that. You're saying early in the career, bit of a setback, and they come back, and you can see the resilience and see the attitude he had. It must be more common than we think.
Yeah, he's...
sunshine and roses to get going, first and foremost. And for him to come back and win, what, four All-Stars he won?
Yeah.
Four All-Stars. And like so funny. Only came back into his career. What year would that have been? He'd have been under 21 in 2007, so he was probably back in at 25. So he did a very unique run through. He did his knee against Dublin in that league game just before lockdown in 2020. And that was probably the end of him. I think he had something to offer in the final, lads. Even like you were in the crowd that day, Tommy, and it was just, we needed something to lift us. Boiler would have taken the roof off the stadium. You were with me down in Leitrim.
Yeah, it happened, yeah.
The game against Leitrim. We were up by 20 points in the game. I say we. Mayo were up against Leitrim by 20 points. I need to be careful now. So Mayo were up by 20 points. A boiler comes on off the crowd. The game is over. And the crowd go mad. Like, so we needed a better energy in the final. I think James made a mistake not bringing them on in the final, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, yeah.
Just and on him as a person, like, very unique character. Quiet, doesn't want any fuss. Doesn't want anthem, you know, and he's just a really kind of unassuming guy and just gets on with it, you know. He's not very typical Mayo, we'll put it that way.
Yeah, there was an unbelievable stat. I missed that one, sorry. There was an unbelievable stat last week as well that I think there's only six footballers to have won All-Stars in a year that their county didn't win All-Irelands. Six footballers to win four or more All-Stars in a year that they're
without an All-Ireland
ever. Yeah, so Canavan I think has four, Cooper has four, John O'Leary could have a bit more, Cooper could have five in a year that he didn't win it, and then Higgins, Lee Keegan, Keith Higgins.
Why do you have to mention so many Mayo fellas? Stop.
Every Mayo player. Yeah.
I butchered it, but it's still a good stat. Lads, we've
that
got
sounded like a good one. Yeah,
I butchered it, sorry about
Google
that.
Google that.
Yeah, we've a great guest coming up this week, and there's another man who's retired. He's somebody who we've spoken about numerous times in the podcast this year. It's Paddy Cunningham. He has got a wand of a left boot, and it's only going to be able to be seen in Lough Yarrug from now on, his club, Antrim. He stepped away from Antrim. He's retired now properly. He stepped away before. So we're going to get chatting to Paddy in a couple of minutes. Owen Cadigan stepped back as well this year. A man that would have been involved back in 2010. So there's retirements left, right and centre at the minute. It's that time of the year.
Christmas around the corner, Tommy. That's what happens. Lads get excited.
This is
going back in January. Knocking on the head.
This is the Mannerly time. This is the Mannerly time to retire. Not like, you know, the week before the All-Ireland final or the second week in January.
Up on more at this
all that has happened is people have come in here, right? Listen to the pod for the last, 29 episodes. And seeing the lifestyle that Paddy Andrews has had since he left.
There's not much crack the last few weeks, lads.
He's wearing a Roddy Collins jacket. He's got his teeth done like Ross from Friends. He is looking he's looking magnificent, and he's ready to go.
He looks like he's in the 20s again. What a man. Just for the pod, lads.
Just for the pod.
Right. I think it's time to get Paddy Cunningham on the line. Okay. Actually, you know what? I'm gonna clarify that stat. Colin Cooper has six All-Stars in a year. He didn't win in All-Ireland. And John O'Leary,
give us one gooch, really.
Lee Keegan and Canavan have four each. So stay tuned. Paddy Cunningham is going to join us next to chat about his time as an Antrim footballer. You're very welcome back to episode 29 of the Football Pod with Paddy and Andy. This is the second time I've done this intro. I'm not going to tell you why I got it wrong the first time around.
Paddy, four here.
Paddy Cunningham, you're very welcome to the podcast. Congratulations on your Antrim career, which you've decided to end over the weekend. It was a tough decision for you to hang up the boots properly this time.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose just chatting down in Paddy there briefly. I think reality sort of slowly but surely starting to sink in that you're not going to be involved this year. Obviously, the lads are going back training soon enough, doing bits and pieces, I think, at the moment. So, but listen, I feel the time is right. You know, 36 now, 37 in May of next year. So, listen, the body was telling me it was nearly time to go, and obviously I have a young family now as well, and probably at this stage I think we've been selfish for long enough and other things are more important now, and lucky enough to have a great wife at home who's been very supportive over my whole career, and listen, I think it's just time to pack it up at this stage. You know, it's not getting any easier. I listened to the lads last week in relation to their stories in relation to Jack McCaffrey and Lee Keegan running the horn of the pits, and it was getting like that for me this season, so that was another reason as well, to be honest.
It the news broke over the weekend, Paddy, so I think Andy was speaking about it before, that it probably took maybe 6 months for it to properly settle in. It was around the time of March, April, when lockdown kicked in, Andy, that you started to process retirement. I doubt, Paddy, that you've really started to process it yet, have you? Or given the fact that you've stepped away before, was that any easier?
Whenever I stepped away, obviously, a load of years ago, I didn't really think I was retired. Far from it. I just felt it was a bit of a break. I needed to recharge the batteries. Now, I didn't expect it to be 6 years, which it ended up being. But no, there's definitely a different feeling to it now, and probably a bit of numbness. You know, obviously, people, the phone's been busy and people have been very, very nice and getting lots of messages and whatever else. But I think the harsh reality of what's lying ahead this winter in terms of not being out training, slowly but surely sinking in. But I'd say Andy's right in relation to sort of the 6 months. I think the first game in the league will if it really hits home, sort of the end of January.
Well, we were just saying it earlier on, Paddy Andrews is the blueprint for how you treat your first year out of retirement. So I think Paddy would be happy enough to share on the plans that he had this year. So
I couldn't wait to retire, Paddy. I was delighted to get out.
it says the man with seven all Ireland. You know, you're weighed down.
No, it's funny. It's like you do realise, I think that's such a common thing, isn't it, Paddy? As you've said, anyone I've spoken about, it, myself, and we've touched on it on different podcasts. It's kind of, there's usually a couple of things. It's either you're right, the body is kind of starting to creak, maybe is a sign, or like you say, life outside of football can kind of not get in the way, but that becomes more a priority when it's young family and things like that, or people with work, or in some instances people just fall out of love with the game, and that's clearly you and Andy most certainly are not in that bracket. You know, if you could go back and start it all again, you go through it again, but there tend to be the common themes that people do step away from GAA at different times throughout their careers. But it's been a phenomenal run for you. And I was intrigued, Paddy, just the success of Antrim this year and Enda McGinley coming in. The momentum, we touched on it throughout the pod. There was a couple of teams that really came back from lockdown. Antrim were one, Offaly under Mahan were another one. Obviously, Mickey Hart went into Loud and did a big job with them as well. And Rory Gallagher with Derry. They were real standout teams that they came back, and the players had energy and the style of play. The coaches, it just seemed fresh. And for Enda to go in there as a relatively inexperienced coach, obviously high profile and part of an amazing Tyrone team. What was the impact? What changed, I suppose? What was so successful for Antrim this year? And what for you as well? Like, some scores you were kicking, Paddy. I'd say every week you were coming up with a bit of magic, and we're just looking, what, like, there must have been some buzz, or what had changed for Antrim this year? And what you hope is going to go on for the team, I suppose, in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I suppose when you only had 5 minutes, any time I got the ball, I was shooting.
You were always like that, though, Paddy,
That's true, actually. Andy will testify to that, too. But no, listen, I think not only with Andy's contribution this year, but, you know, you have to look at his background team. He brought in Sean Kelly, who obviously was a phenomenal player for St Gaul's and Antrim, maybe won 10, 11 club championships and all Ireland with St Gaul's. So, commands huge respect within Antrim football and GAA. And, you know, I was a defensive coach, and obviously it's Stephen O'Neill as well, who needs no introduction. Yeah. So, having his brains and total change, you know, probably traditionally over the last sort of 5, 6 years within Antrim, it's been trying to basically Domi's limitation in terms of the scoreboard, whereas Stevie O'Neill, really forward thinking, was an absolute joy to train under. Just so simple, but it was just incredible. Like the drills you were doing in training in terms of forward play was just, it was just a total breath of fresh air. You know, obviously you were used to 14 men behind the ball, maybe breaking out. Three or four had to stay at the back, all that nonsense where Stevie said, listen, we have to score, so let's go. You know, so Stevie O'Neill was incredible. And that's probably my biggest regret about retiring this year, the fact that only got to play under him and John for one season, because I do think the fruits are there at the moment to maybe push on Division 3. You know, it's not a frightening division. Obviously, Cavan and Tipperary have sunk down to four, where you know, it's a competitive enough division, and I feel if hopefully Mick McCann, not to put him under any pressure, hangs in for another year. Me and him are the same age, but hopefully if he can hang in, and you know, I think it would be a big loss in terms of experience and a bit of talking and leadership in the dressing room. If both of us went at the same time, so I got out first, so he has to stay for another year.
Was there any temptation, Paddy, to go again? Was there anything in you saying, bear the kind of love for the game, was there any temptation to say, right, come on, Stevie O'Neill, end it here, we'll go again?
Yeah, possibly, Andy, but I suppose when you look at it, probably the whole year last year, I played maybe the guts of 30 minutes, you know. And listen, we all know and we're very much aware of the hard yards that have to go in away from training, especially the older you get, the more sort of body management and recovery you have to do. And probably the biggest factor, say, is not was family, you know, of a young lad there, who Padraig, he's 8, he's sport mad, as you can imagine, he's into everything. And to be fair, it's tough to ask player away to run the girls, they're all their stuff, and Padraig do all his sport. And to be honest, that was hurting me the most probably last year, was missing all his games and missing all his trainings. And I think, to be honest, that was probably the pivotal factor in terms of everything. You know, we're all very selfish when we're in that bubble. And I just feel now, to be honest, I've had my fill of it, and it's time to really give back to the family.
Yeah, that's so understandable. But you can tell how excited you got playing football under someone like Stevie O'Neill as a forwards coach. Did that reinvigorate you again? Because like, was it last year that you had that smashing campaign with Lough Yarrig, and we gave Jerome Quinn a couple of shout outs in the pod across the year, but you were kicking points for Lough. You had an unbelievable club run as well. Was that during COVID as well?
Yeah, but sort of the last few years we've been heavily involved in the Antrim Championship with a couple of ding-dong games, maybe went 3 replays and stuff like that, and then a game which was heavily stopped from free, so I went there replay. But Stevie and all the lads this year, they probably brought in an added level as well in terms of professionalism. And you know, I'd love to have been 21 again. You know, I learned so much off Stevie in the space of 6 months. You can see why he was the player he was. And you know, and again, it was nothing magical. It was nothing outside the box, just wee small things. And probably...
Go on, give us something there.
No, it's just movement patterns, you know, being at the right place, right time. You probably thought that, not that you're always learning, even no matter what age you are, you continue to learn and develop as a player, but just wee small things that, you know, and to be fair, not to blow Andy's trumpet, it was the same even with him at Jordanstown. You always picked up one or two things off the players around you. And definitely this year with Stevie, you know, I would love to be 20, 21 in Antrim County football at the moment now in the forward line.
And he'd be letting you shoot from the corner flags too, which suited you down to the ground.
I always liked everyone like that. Everyone on this podcast like that.
Well, that was the thing. That's right. Any time you missed, and Stevie, sure, look at your point against Kildare. I was in the scoring zone, so that always got me out of jail. To be fair, he never missed, though. Obviously,
I'll tell you a story about Stevie O'Neill. My glorious cornerback days. We played them in the opening game in Crow Park under lights. I think it was 2009, and somehow I was cornerback, and I was marking Stephen O'Neill. Like, this is catastrophic. This is January time. I'm only 20, maybe 21. Gilroy has me cornerback for some reason. And Tyrone had won the All-Ireland the year before. So I come out and get a diving block. Colin Boyle, as we were talking about, on Sean Kavanagh. And a block, and I can't believe it. I'm there delighted with myself. The ball rebounds out to Stephen O'Neill, who's actually my man. And he's on the end line in the canal end. And I mean, his foot is on the end line. on the wrong side. He's over the corner between the canal end and the Cusack stand. So I kind of get up, delighted with me blocking, going, this fella's not going to do anything here. And he shoots and he scores. Like, I don't know how he did this, honestly, because left foot at that angle literally was foot on the end line, goes over the bar. And there was like a gasp in Crow Park. And we were jogging back out. He didn't say anything. I was looking at him going, how fuck did that just happen? And Al Mulligan just turns around laughing at me. He goes, he's something else, isn't he? Like, they're 20 years of age, God, this is not what I signed up for. Cornerback.
There's a book in your cornerback days, never mind your seven All-Irelands.
Just one on Paddy. We played Jordanstown in, we played for Sligo back years ago. It was the day Pete Donnelly done my shoulder, Paddy. You came on it.
I don't think
you didn't start. Jordanstown won on penalties. So I had to go to the hospital after about 12 minutes. Pete decided to take me, half me in two with a shoulder. So up to the hospital, and I'm waiting for my woman to come up to me. I'm like, where? I wanted to know the result. I didn't know what the result was. No Twitter or nothing. So I'm thinking, well, what's the result? And Jenny comes up to me. She goes, it's gone to penalties. And I go, why? What are you doing here? Go down and watch the fucking penalties. I said, you know. But she goes, Andy, there was this fella that came on for Jordanstown. She goes, he was unreal. He was kicking points from the sidelines, right, left. You just hit fire that day, Paddy. The boys are all talking about you. You hit one from the right, one from the left. And she goes, he's unreal. I said, what does he look like? She goes, I said, Paddy Cunningham. But we knew, but it was that day that you really came to light with me. The boys were just like, this fella is unbelievable. You were kicking points from right, left, centre. I didn't see any of them, but I feel like I've seen them, you know?
Yeah, that was my first ever game for Jordanstown, ever.
Yeah.
I only got brought onto the panel that week. So obviously Jordanstown was a star-studded lineup year upon year. And if you were from Antrim, you weren't really part and parcel of the squad. Not to, and I was hurling at the time as well. I think I was in the county hurling panel at that stage. And I think I played a club game the previous weekend. It was, hey, sort of, I don't know what happened, but basically I got a phone call from the famous Tommy Joe saying, would you be interested in joining the panel? That was on the Sunday. I think that game was on the Wednesday, Andy. And literally he just got brought on. It was the maddest game ever, as Andy says. Obviously he missed it. So I think I came on, we were 4 or 5 down, had a decent enough second half. Ding dong, extra time, 2 10-minute periods, 2 5-minute periods, and then penalties. And then I hit a penalty. Just young and probably shouldn't have been anywhere near the penalty. But I never forget. It was literally, and I remember Pete Donnelly, obviously being the lad he was, took me straight under his wing, like on the bus on the way down. And you had Finn Moe from Armagh. He stretched the whole way down. It was just a great, great team, and that was my introduction to the university football. I literally had never played for Jordanstown until that day.
Yeah, well, Pete did half me in the thing, and Paddy just on about the sort of fella he was, so he. Me and Pete became great friends after that, actually, because I'm sitting above in the hospital. The game has gone to extra time, penalties. It must be 10 o'clock at night, whatever time it was at the time. And Pete is the first guy up to the hospital, and he comes up and from that moment on, even though he broke my shoulder, we became good buddies, you know.
Did Jordan Sam win? Yeah, Paddy, you inspired him to victory, did you?
I don't know about that. Now we won in the end, yeah. Okay. And then Andy came up the road. Was the following year, Andy, or 2 years later? So
I think it was 2 years after, because we played G, I think, the year after above in Belfast in the Sigerson, didn't we? Or the year after.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So that's like 06, 06, 07, is it around that time? Yeah. Okay. And you're dual at that. You played hurling for Antrim as well, Paddy, obviously. Like you, did you combine both for a couple of years in those early years?
Yeah, it's a combined minor and under 21, which is obviously easy enough. And then I came out of minor, the county minor hurlers, and went straight into the senior hurlers under Denny Cahill. And then I was sort of kicking about both panels, master and none. And then I committed to the footballers then, and then started then from there on in.
And like growing up, were you a hurler or a footballer, or were you both?
I was probably none, to be honest. To be honest, I was probably a late developer, so to speak. Probably sub in most teams, so I was maybe 15, 16, 17. I actually done Nats for the school, and there's now Colleges All-Stars thing up here in hurling. So I got a couple of those and sort of kicked on. We lived in Derry. Believe it or not, my daddy had a couple of businesses up there. So I played for a real junior club up there in both codes, moved down to Belfast. Mum and dad are originally from here. And my daddy opened a new business in the Falls Road, which he still has today, and joined my and daddy's club who they would have played for when they were here, and then just sort of it sort of went on from there. And then unfortunately had to give up the hurling once with county football. Obviously it's very difficult to do both, but I think that's really what I'm going to do next year, is go back and play a bit of hurling for some enjoyment, you know, and miss it massively now.
Fair play. You'll still be busy. You'll still be flat out with the hurling and the football next year.
It'll be a little less pressure than playing county. So
I'm telling you, you have to follow the Paddy Andrews blueprint. He hasn't gone near St. Bridges apart. I think you watched your niece this year in action, and that was it. You're playing for the underdog.
You know what niece or nephews are playing, but not when I'm playing myself. God, no.
Telling you, the Paddy Andrews blueprint, he's there to help footballers and hurlers transition into retirement, and he's got it all laid out.
Paddy, I'll send you the template. Don't worry, I'll email it across to you.
You're telling us you're a late bloomer, and like when I've watched you play football, it's always been clips. It's been outrageous scores from the wings, as Andy's saying. He didn't even have to see the points you scored that night. He's seen them so many times before. Where did that come from? Like, is that practice? Are you just backing yourself in the pitch? Are you always able to do it?
I'd say, to be fair, where we lived in Derry, as I said, and I joined a club that was 14, and we lived close to a set of playing fields, and I would have literally been the Lone Ranger down there by myself with a bag of balls, maybe one ball at a time, running, getting it out of the trees and back out. It probably was practice, even through my whole career. I probably would have, right through my 20s, still would have done a lot of kicking practice by myself, both free taking on from play, and I think it's just repetition. And obviously there's an element of backing yourself, but at the same time, it just came natural. You know, if you had the ball, you want to score. And if you don't shoot, you don't score. And probably at times, it probably did shoot from the wrong areas. But I suppose with the amount of time and effort you put in away by yourself, you know, you probably had the confidence in the big moments to try and take on those shots. And sometimes it paid off, other times maybe not so much.
Yeah, Tommy said you got plenty of mentions in the pod during the course of the National League and the Championship, and just kicking bombs left, right and centre against Sligo and a few of the other teams. What, like, did you find that easier, Paddy, coming on as a sub? John, did you find that easier? Like, were you watching the game while the game was going on? Were you spotting little gaps where you could get into, or was it just instinct, ball comes to you and away you go and you kick it over?
Probably a bit of both, Andy. Obviously, you're always watching. You know, if you're on the bench or spectating the game, you're obviously watching what's going on and sort of trying to pick up, you know, different sort of areas of maybe you could exploit if you're either managing or playing. So, but again, you're only on for a matter of a few minutes, so you're trying to make an impact, just, you know, and take your chances if it comes your way. And I was frustrated, you know, probably. I was obviously commending Stevie so much, but he probably came a reality for me early in the season that, although they persuaded me to come back for a year, that it was going to be my role this year was to come on off the bench rather than start, which was something I obviously struggled with at the beginning of the year because it was always just the playing. And like obviously last year, I think under Lanny, I was probably one of the higher scorers, if not the top scorer. So to go from that to being an impact sub was a tough transition. So it was probably in the back of my head, listen, if I can prove myself in these 5 minutes or 6 minutes, yeah, yeah, you know, I'll make it back in the starting 15. And that's probably, that was my mindset going in to make a difference and try and get the lads over the line as well.
Well, you did, like, you kicked the winner against Louth. I think there was that unbelievable shot from the left wing. And then it's Sligo the following week. Is it the equaliser against Sligo or the winner? Am I remembering that right?
The last one, yeah, the winner.
Yeah. And then it's condensed season, like, so that's Antrim back up to Division 3. So like when you're looking back in on your Antrim days,
yeah, I have to mention the boots looking magnificent in his old Preds and his old Manias as well.
You kept them around.
Can I just say, Tommy, it's funny, and just pick it up on that, Paddy, because I would add something similar, and Andy, you obviously had it, yeah, as well. I think you pushed on it maybe 16, was it, one of Horan's years, coming on as a sub, particularly in the forwards. And particularly if you've got 5 or 10 minutes. I remember this was a big thing for me at different times when I wasn't playing as well. You come on and you have to make an impact because you want to throw your name in the hat for selection for the next day. But you don't want to force things either. Because if you're saying that was a big thing with us with Dublin, and it was like, you take the wrong option or you come on as a sub. And we had a couple of examples with lads throughout the years where they do and everyone's thinking the same thing, and it's not nearly selfish. It's like, I need to make an impact here. So you take on a shot that you shouldn't take on, you try and go by lads and you lose the ball, or you're just overdoing it. But then on the flip side, you come in and you do the right things and you pop the hand pass off and you track your man, you do all those things, but that's not standing out. That's not going to get you into the team. So it's such a hard position to be in mentally. Andy, you said it, was it Tony McAtee saying to you, was it 16, you think you're doing everything right, but then you can go and try and force and need to clip a couple of scores, and that can nearly count against you. That's what the manager remembers. That fella came on and he did the wrong thing. And we had it a lot with Dublin. It was such a difficult situation to be in, where when you're in the team, it's easy to have confidence and take those shots on and shoot from the angles and all that type of stuff. It's such a fine balance to find, Paddy. Did you have that? Was there ever a doubt, like say you're coming on for 5 or 10 minutes and I'm going, should I take this shot? If this shot doesn't go right, it's a tricky one for
Shubs. I think the big sort of advantage I probably had, and I think it's more difficult for maybe lads trying to break onto a team or break onto a panel, the fact that you played so many minutes, you've been in so many different situations, you had so many years behind you, I didn't really feel as if I had to prove myself. Do you know? Well, obviously, to be honest, I probably did, because obviously I was old. Maybe people are questioning, saying, can he play at this level, at this age, and whatever else. But I think the fact that I had played front for so long, you knew you had the support of the spectators. The supporters in the county have been unbelievable. The players were obviously really supportive and were, you felt part of the team and part of the dressing room, so to speak. So I think it was easier for me because I played. See, I think it would be very difficult for a young lad coming on or in a setup where they've no experience and they're going, what do I do? Do I take the shot? Whereas if they were playing for their club, it would be second nature. They wouldn't think about it. So I think that was one huge benefit I had this year of coming on in those games, because it was nothing new to you. You played 100 times before. So whereas I feel, I understand totally what they're saying in racing, especially in Dublin, I can only imagine what it's like coming into that team and you're getting maybe 1 minute or 2 minutes or 5 minutes or 10 minutes in a nip and tuck game in Croke Park. So there's context too, but I think the fact that I played before and been there and done it was a lot easier for me than coming into, a new atmosphere, so to speak.
So you're 35, coming 36 last season when you're playing or moving into 36 and you're sitting on the bench, do you still think you're good enough to start?
Like Ronaldo here.
Thanks for that one. I always looked at the year before, what I'd done the year before. So to go from, maybe playing 45, 50 minutes and kicking a few scores or whatever else to go on to playing five, it was one extreme to the other, Yeah. But at the same time, at the end of the day, and that's what I say now, and I can say wholeheartedly, we got to Division 3. So the lads were right. Yeah. So no matter what, if we hadn't got promoted, I could have, but at the end of the day, sometimes you have to adjust to your role in the team. You mightn't like it, but that's part and parcel of it.
But I think that's the frustration. The reason I asked the question, I think that's and there's a good learning in that for a lot of older players. I think that's the frustration when you get a bit older, your time is running out. You're still thinking, I'm good enough still here to play, and you're only getting 5 minutes. And it's kind of counterintuitive.
You have to have that, to be a successful player, you have to have that mentality. You have to back yourself. Like that's such a, I always like people saying ego can be a bad thing. Ego's needed in elite sport. You need to have confidence in your ability. Like Paddy saying, swinging shots over from there. You did it yourself, Andy. I know when I was at my best as well, I wasn't thinking about what I was backing myself. And you have to have that confidence in yourself. And it's very hard. That mentality is part of why you are where you are and why you're successful in your career. It's very hard to turn that off just because you're a little bit older. And I think the best managers are understand that. Even you look at Ronaldo in a soccer sense, he's 37 or 36 or 37. He definitely still thinks he's the best, but that's part. And people outside are looking at him going, you're not, you're older. And particularly in GAA, there seems to be, when you reach a certain age, the media, like, when is this guy retiring? Supporters are kind of questioning, going, what about the younger lads? But I think players, the best players, have that confidence in themselves. And you need to have that. You need to have that, because if you don't, everyone else will write you off anyway. So I agree with Paddy. Frustrated that you're sitting on the bench. And we had it with Dublin as well, with some of our bigger players.
Did you have it in 20?
No, I knew I was finished. That's when I knew I was totally finished.
honestly,
I swear, yeah, I did. But there was definitely times in 19 where I was looking at, I was playing, and I was playing well, and then I broke my jaw.
Yeah.
With a collision with Morgan, and then I missed basically two, three months and came back in the summer. And like I say, the show was kind of on the road then, and exactly what Paddy's saying, the team is winning, so you can't be knocking down Jim Gavin's door going, you know, why am I not playing type thing. I never really did that. I just kind of got the head down and tried to perform as well as I can. But there was definitely times I'm thinking, like, sitting on the bench and you're going, I can add something here. But of course, I think that we won, so the coaches are ultimately proven right.
But at the same time, that's what you want, though. You want that environment, you want that atmosphere. You know, like, I have no time for boys. And to be fair, Mayo and Dublin, and even hopefully within Antrim, it's not the case. But see any lad that's going along just to get the tracks out, like, and happy enough to be there and don't want to, you know, you need that. That's a winning mentality, and that's why teams are successful. You need, like, you don't want any passengers. If you're sitting on the bench, you don't want to be playing, there's something seriously wrong too. Like.
Yeah. Well, we spoke about it earlier in the summer, but Bernard Brogan has that passage in his book in between the replays in 2016. And he references the A versus B games, and he obviously plays so well in between the two replays, and he's knocking on Jim Gavin's door. He's like, we need a striker. I can be that striker. So there's a fine balance there between, you know, but there is, like, it is so important to have players like that. Like, Jesus, the amount of depth that G had in those 2 years, Paddy, like, as you spoke about there, was just unbelievable. It was absolutely insane.
That's exactly what Paddy's just saying. You gotta push, even if you're not playing, and it can be harder. Particularly for players who have played and have a lot of miles on the clock and have had the big days and have big moments in the careers, it's hard to maybe accept that. But you got to keep fighting for it. You got to keep fighting, and that's nobody likes that. But that's adding to the team. Nobody likes to have that role, like Paddy said. Yeah, kind of, you're a sub or you're an impact sub, or you might not even get on. And that's where I kind of finished my career. And it's gas. You probably do come full circle. You break into the team and you're a new kid on the block, then you get in and you're established, and then by the end you're nearly back to square one again. You're trying to prove yourself and get a few minutes, but it's no secret the best teams and the most successful teams have that. Just there's constantly guys trying to push each other to get better, and you need to have it, and you need to have rows, and you need to maybe have disagreements with managers and things like that as well, but ultimately everyone's doing it for the betterment of the team. Like, I don't agree with going and having a full-on row with a manager when you've no case to be him. If you're not playing well or you're not training well, you have to have a bit of self-awareness there and go, I need to get my ducks in a row before I start going annoying the manager or anything like that.
There's a way to do it.
Oh, 100%. And I've seen the other side. I have seen players where they shouldn't be near the team and their reaction is not good. And they're throwing the toys out of the pram. And that's up to the players, I suppose, to kind of pull that up as well. But I've seen it on the other side where players are breaking their neck to get in, and they're pushing and they're doing everything, and the managers they'll have that conversation happening, go, you need that in teams, you need that particularly over a longer season, because it just builds the atmosphere and it keeps everyone on their toes, and that's how you get momentum. That's how we had it, that's how Andy had it, that's what it sounds like. You can see what Antrim are doing now, that the coaches are challenging the players to get better, you know.
There was a piece published on Off the Ball 2 weeks ago by a colleague of mine, Arto Adi, and it was with James Skehill, the Galway goalkeeper. It's an unbelievable piece as well, worth digging out and having a read. But in it, there's a Skehill kind of reenacts the season that Colm Callanan won his All-Star in goals. Skehill says that the atmosphere in training and amongst them was so good. Like, so you had Skehill and Callanan who were sharing the goalkeeping position. I think every couple of years they might swap, or every year they might swap. And the atmosphere was so good in training that Skehill could turn around to Colm Callanan and say, I've won you your effing All-Star this year. You've won it because of me. That sticks out to me. Unbelievable. There was obviously, Andy, in your book, just to give it a little mention there, you wrote about a teammate who didn't probably get the highlights all the time, but he would have been an unbelievable player in terms of getting you ready for your own matches. And Keelan Crowe, he would have got a bit of a mention in your book in terms of a player who obviously put the work in the background. I don't know whether Keelan Crowe was knocking on management's door to get starting, but he was obviously driving you along and training all the time.
Yeah, he's brilliant. And the lads all have players like that. I'm sure Paddy did some of that last year as well for Antrim. And I'm sure, like, people who would stick out to me for Dublin would be the likes of Darren Daly and them guys who mightn't have played as much minutes as they wanted to. But I'm sure Paddy got the full of Darren Daly's pace going up the field, skinning him up the field time and time again, you know, in training. For me, it was Keelan Crowe, just an unbelievable teammate in terms of I think the hardest part, and sorry, Paddy, no, for couldn't, but like the hardest part for a team when you're on a run is that time between an All-Ireland semi-final and final, because you kind of know if you're not in the 26th there for the semi-final, you kind of know unless something, someone gets injured or something drastic happens. Thing. So you have two options there. You have an option to throw the toys out of the pram and just leave it to a side. You have the option to come in and just be an unbelievable individual around the place. And the likes of Keelan Crowe, my own brother-in-law, David Drake, and a few others did it for us. But I'm sure the lads here, and you even with your club, there's certain people that you can picture who have been that person. And I'm sure even Paddy last year, Paddy Cunningham, or Paddy Hands as he's known, I'm sure he was that. I was just thinking there, like, what a loss you'll be to that Antrim. And I know it's not the way you want to be remembered or anything like that, but I'm sure you led that substitute bench in a way that only you could do it. And I'm sure you're on about Mick McCann there, but I'm sure you're going to be a huge loss to show these young fellas how they're supposed to react, how they're supposed to get better, how they're supposed to react to disappointment of not being there. And your way was to come on, look at magnificent in your manias and kicking spinners left, right and centre when you came on. So it's there's lessons there as well, you know?
That's probably the biggest thing. You know, obviously, you went from starting to somebody else taking your position, and, you know, you have to get over that. And then, obviously, you're looking, you know, your best days are in the past and there's new lads coming in. And that was probably one of the most rewarding things I got last year is, like, Oran Eastwood, Adam Lachran, you know, young lads now breaking into the scene who've been patient, to be fair. You know, they're maybe 23, 24, and you're trying to encourage them and coach them and mould them, and, you know, trying to advance them. And to be fair, once you got into that mode where you knew what your role was, trying to improve, because they're the next generation, you know they're going to lead the forward line for the next 5, 6, 7 years. So that was enjoyable now, to be fair. That was something that I really found rewarding this year, like, it's, you know, trying to, obviously, if they're marking somebody or they're worried or they're nervous, just saying this and, you know, just trying to sort of help them any way you could. And I'd say, to be fair, Andy, you'd probably been quite good at that too, I'm sure.
Yeah, it was a role I had to fit into in 19. I realised fairly abruptly that, the race here is ran. You know, I thought I was going to make the team for a while, and then it was just, okay, this is my role here. What can we do? And it probably started a bit before that, but like they're the guys who are going to be going sporting for the next 5, 6 years. So it's so important to kind of give them the transition, because we've talked about the guys in Meath, McEntee and Keoghan. They've probably showed the young fellas now how to prepare, how to work, how to get there. So even if they leave without something won, they've still left a legacy behind them. And I think that's the key thing. But Paddy, I have to bring you back before you go to we won a Sigerson together. The boys were slagging me all through. They were slagging me, "You went to college with everyone," they used to say. And then when he said, Paddy actually turned around and he goes, "Tell me you went to college with him as well." And I said, "I did, yeah." But we won a Sigerson, and the full forward line was myself, Big Show Lynch, and
Mark Lynch.
Mark Lynch and Paddy Gunning.
What year did you win that?
Oh, 8.
No, 8. And the final was delayed, and it was
you
all
made us. No.
By the time we got to the final, I was done at that stage for that year. I had an awful year after it. But Cunningham scores 1-8.
1-9.
Okay, 1-9. Sorry, I thought it was 1-8. Me in the middle scored 0. Now, the paper gave me credit for a sideline that Mark Lynch kicked. I never kicked this one. I took credit for it.
You were creating space. This is where I started to create space.
No,
story around this came out.
But Big Show Lynch scores 9 points. And we came from, all my mates came down to Carlo to watch the game and everything. Now, you look at it, I think sometimes you can get caught in what fellas did and how good they were and All-Stars and all this nonsense. These two boys either side of me, like you talk for Lynch here as well, Paddy, like he was a genius, like, in terms of football. Like, if Paddy was beside me 1-8, like we worked really well together at a time, but the two boys just ripped it up that night. And it's one of the highlights of my whole kind of career, because we've seen yourself, Lacey, Ramey Mulgrew and Lynch just kind of take over the game. It was amazing. But I'm sure it was a highlight for yourself as well.
Okay, absolutely. And I suppose even the names you named there, it was some team when you look back at it, like Lacey, Charlie Harrison, yourself, Tomas McCann, Mark Lynch, you know, I think Darren Hughes was sub. You know, it was a phenomenal team when you look back at it. Like, and I suppose, to be fair, we got so close the year before. We played Queens in the dub. Get beat after extra time, but the game went won and friggin' dodgy kick out, kicked straight to Owen McCartan. He kicked an equaliser, but still a sore point. But no, and again, do yeah,
far, hey, what, hey, tell them how we met them the year after. Some little left foot wizard kicked a free to. Did you equalise or did you kick winner? Equalise it, run to extra time, yeah.
That's right, it's about the extra time, yeah. But even the guards game, we made hard work of that. That went the extra time too, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
But listen, to be fair, that I wish if I had had that full forward in my whole career, it could have been a very different career. Really. We were hard to stop now between the three of us. You've done all the dirty work and handed to me, and I was out on the easy bit after that. But
Brendan Crossan obviously interviewed you around your retirement at the weekend, but he actually went and spoke to Mark Lynch. Andy, I don't know if you spotted that or if it changed your memory. So, Paddy, I don't know if you read this back now, but yeah, unbelievable footballer. But Mark Lynch said he was speaking about that game and playing with Paddy and Andy inside in the full forward line. It still sticks in my head to this day. Paddy scored something like 1-9 and he never came outside the 20-yard line. It was Paddy, Andy Moran and myself in the full forward line. I'm useless inside. I have no dummy, no nothing, and I usually got held up. But the best thing about Paddy was he was always there. As soon as he turned, it was over the bar. It was unbelievable. He was in the right place at the right time. What stuck out for me was Paddy's efficiency. He has something like 97 or 98% conversion rate. He always loved the other side, where it's going across his boot rather than the inside of his boot. Andy and me would have gone naturally to the right, but Paddy would be on the loop. Bang, over the bar. The guards didn't know what to do with him. I hope that was the first time I've ever said about you. Paddy doesn't have lightning pace.
Paddy, the pace and I would have been different.
Paddy doesn't have lightning pace, but he has unbelievable spatial awareness. He's like a snooker player. He's three shots ahead. It's hard to describe, to be honest. I learned so much from playing with Paddy and Andy. So that's Mark Lynch speaking to Brendan Crossan in the Irish News of the weekend. He's done pretty well describing you there as a footballer, Paddy. Like, that's class, reading that.
Listen, to be fair, those two lads, Mark and Andy, were unreal to play with. Like, listen, it's all about who's playing around you as well. Like, the lads will testify. If you're in the same wavelength as the boys around you, it's half the battle. You know, I knew what they were going to do and they knew what I was going to do, and we just clicked. You know, whenever you're clicking in a full forward line, you're hard to stop. And
yeah.
Andy said, obviously, he didn't do much that day, but in the semi-final and quarter-final, maybe he was on song. Out of the three of us, there was always one of us or two of us that clicked every game. And, you know, you can maybe mark one or two of us, but you weren't going to mark the three of us every day. Do you know what?
Yeah, I remember the kicking competitions. Now, I would the two boys would be out on the sideline. And Lynch had some boot on him, didn't he, Paddy?
Oh, I didn't
know. And sidelines, I was like in on the 13, tipping over my little boy.
You were flexing your hand passing over the bar,
like. Over the bar. And the two boys used to be just whipping these ones over the bar. Kieran Donnelly used to be with you. It was good fun.
Oh, that's right. But Lynch's dummy, he did have a dummy. It was just like around my road. He used to just swing boys. He was strong as an ox. He was an absolute bear.
I feel like I'm doing him complete injustice by saying that he used to win his All-Stars or his All-Star nominations in the spring. Like, he was an unbelievable winter footballer around that time of the year. Maybe it was just that Derry weren't getting that many runs at that time.
Derry got to the league final in 14.
Mm.
And we bet him in the final, but they bet us up in Celtic Park. And he was phenomenal in that run. I think they topped Division 1 and then we played them in the final. They bet us by 6 or 7 points and he was off the charts. I think every week in the 7 or 8 National League games to get to the final, he was man of the match, or he'd scored 7 or 8 points. And like that, they were like, he was bombing them over from everywhere. And we were like, what are we doing with this fella? Like, he was incredible. You could just see technically. And that's what I'd say, Paddy yourself and Moran, to be fair to you, like the technical ability, it's gas. Like you're talking about, we touched on it over the last couple of weeks. Mightn't be the fastest or the big strongest guys of them all, but just the technical skills, and particularly in the full forward line, it's crucial. If you don't have that, it's no point in having the other stuff. But if you get the ball in their hands and you are like a Paddy, and to be honest, all the best players are, when it's in their hands, it's probably too late for the opposition. They're going to get the shots off. You know?
Just a point on that, Tommy, just with Lynchy, and two of the best players I played with at college were Mark Lynch and Christy Toy. And I think it was Ulster football more so than the summer football, because it went really defensive at the time. And like Toy for us in Sligo used to just get the ball 21, run 50, 60 yards. Give it to one of the players. But in Ulster, if you think about it at the time, was mass defences, 10, 12 people.
Yeah.
And if you were that sort of player, you struggled. If Lynch was down in in Connacht or Leinster at the time.
Yeah.
You'd have been talking multiple All-Stars.
Ah, he was unbelievable.
Like, he'd have been running into space, and then he'd been running into gaps. It was just like, if you think about Mark Lynch, he played midfield, centre back, centre forward, full forward.
Yeah.
There's not much more you can do for your county than that, you know.
Yeah. Paddy, the following year, so you win the Sigerson in 08. The following year, you're captain and answering to an Ulster final against Tyrone. Like, that must have been a monumental occasion. When you're looking back in your football career, and I suppose you must have over the last couple of days, where was your favourite time you played football, or what was the favourite kind of few years that you were playing football? When did it click for you?
It's hard to know. I was winning the club championship there a couple of years ago was probably my favourite moment, to be honest with you. But in terms of sort of that highlight, few years was probably sort of happened so quick. I was just an average club player, and then just obviously broke on that year to the Jordanstown team against Sligo IT. Then we got beaten in the 07 final after extra time against Queens, 1-0-8, captain Antrim in 09 in Ulster final, which obviously doesn't happen too often from an Antrim point of view. I think we went from Division 4 to 3 to 2 under Baker over those couple of years as well. Yeah. So probably that period, 2008 to 2011-12, obviously leading Antrim out in the Ulster final was a huge honour and something I'll always remember. It was incredible. That whole year was... We beat Donegal up in Balbuffet, then beat Cavan on a Saturday night. You know, that was just a dream year from the whole county's point of view, and it was great to be part of it, and honoured to be captain of that team. The great squad too, like, so probably 2020 or 2009. So
this is a random one I'm throwing at you now, but I have a theory that Belfast is an untapped giant in Gaelic games. That if the government or the GAA were to turn around, or the headquarters in Croke Park were to turn around like they did back in 03 when they thought that Gaelic football was dying in the capital in Dublin, and they put a task force together to revitalise it, and look where they are now. If the same could be done in Belfast, I have a feeling like that Antrim hurling and football could really progress an awful lot in a short space of time. Does it feel like that in terms of, are you a sleeping giant up there, or is it a constant battle to try and get to Division 2, to get to Ulster Finals?
I think it's, you know, obviously at the moment we're struggling. We haven't had Casement Park. I couldn't remember the last time I played in Casement Park. I was lucky enough, obviously, to play there. But there's nearly a whole generation of county players have missed out in Casement Park, which is a frightening statement to say. So I always remember once I moved down from Derry to Belfast, I was in Casement every weekend with hurling ball or football. You know, it could have been anybody playing. It could have been a Camogie match, ladies football, whatever it may have been, Ulster Championship match, and you were there. So I think, not that Casement's the be-all and end-all, but, you know, you have Windsor Park, state-of-the-art soccer facility, amazing stadium. You've Kingspan Ravenhill, the Ulster rugby ground, and you know there's so much competition in the city, as I'm sure Paddy will testify to in Dublin, between soccer and rugby and other sports, and really feel GAA needs an identity in the city. But listen, there's kids. I'm obviously a teacher. You know, I'm on the ground. I see in schools the amount of children playing sports, and there is competition now with soccer and rugby, because you know they're very attractive sports as well, you know. So I do feel, you know, obviously there's funding being put in with Gaelfast, which is like a coaching initiative from the county board, but listen, it's only a stepping stone, and there probably needs to be more substantial funding put into that. But you know, I feel now with a progressive county board as well for the first time in a long time, and you know there's a lot of good people there and a lot of good work going on, and listen, that'll take time to come to fruition. But I definitely do feel that there's things in place there which hopefully will develop things over the next sort of decade. But I do really feel if Casement got built and up and running, you know, for young people to see that stadium and see what, you know, what it brings to the area and to the community, and I think it would be phenomenal for young people in Belfast to see a sort of a flagship stadium for Gaelic games in the city.
Yeah, it's so important. It's insane the way that Casement was just let go, and it just, nothing's been done in so long around it. Like, it's unbelievable.
I'll tell you, like, we obviously drew Cavan yesterday in the Ulster Championship. That match is set for Carrigan Park, which is a club ground.
Yeah.
And a fine club ground at that. But
I played it.
After I'm at risk of losing that Ulster Championship game because I mightn't be able to facilitate the crowd, you know, which is shocking. You know, obviously Antrim need every bit of help they can get, and home advantage is a huge thing to give up if we can't, you know, hold the crowd for that game.
Yeah. Paddy, just on like in comparison with Dublin here, the competition between different sports is massive. And look, it's great you want kids out playing all sports, but ideally, like, you want to play in GAA in an ideal scenario. And I think the biggest thing for young kids, it's either the team they're following is really successful, or there's an unreal facility. So if it's not one, ideally you'd have both, that the team is flying it and there's great facilities and kids just want to go there and either be in the stadium or go and train there or be able to play club matches or FAIL finals or school finals or watch the team be successful. That's what really, that draws kids in, you know, because there's so much choice, particularly in big cities, that if it's not happening in GAA or it's not happening in hurling, they'll see, well, the soccer team is doing well, or Ulster there, or we have a Leinster rugby here in Dublin. That's just taken off over the last time. I remember I started playing, or when I was growing up, rugby was kind of south side of the city, that was it really. And then all of a sudden the team started being successful, Leinster were successful, and the Irish rugby team were successful, and then all of a sudden rugby was everywhere. Everywhere in Dublin, and the numbers they have are massive, and that's driven by the success of the team, and then obviously the facilities that go with that as well. And you're looking at Antrim there, the numbers you guys would have, the passion that's obviously there in the GAA community as well. I just think it's incredible that, like I say, a kind of historic stadium like Casement Park, you've seen the money they put into Cork and Páirc Uaibh, and you're right, the soccer and rugby have got it in Belfast. Like, what a stadium that could be for, not just for Antrim, but for the whole Ulster GAA. Do you know what I mean? The finals are in Clonus and these places, which are probably a bit run down now, to be fair, that a facility like that in Belfast would be massive for kids to play, and also for Antrim to benefit as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And probably in hindsight, we probably should have kept Casement up and running as it was. But, you know, obviously we were hopeful that the planned application would have went through first time around. But yeah, obviously, I think there's an art judicial review in against this. But yeah, by all accounts, hopefully it should be a smoother process this time. And listen, you have to understand there are residents who you will be against it, but you have to think of the greater good here. You know, I think even the bulk of the residents within the area are mostly supportive of the project now. And, you know, the GAA needs an identity in Belfast. It's been missing for so long, and not only from the sporting aspect, but when you look what it's going to bring the economy within Belfast, you know, in terms of the local area and jobs and, you know, infrastructure and everything else, you know, it's a huge opportunity, and the sooner it happens, the better for all aspects of Gaels within Belfast and Antrim. And as Paddy says, the Ulster Finals due to be played in case, and what, you know, if Antrim weren't in it, what an occasion for young people within the area to go and watch Tyrone play Donegal in Ulster Final.
Yeah, 100%. Paddy, you've been so good with your time. Can I throw a couple of quick ones at you?
There's nothing quick on this pod, go on.
You can be quick. That's the thing. They're quick questions and you can be quick. Paddy Hands, explain the nickname to me.
Just partly I have fat hands, so it's a friend of mine, Joe. a friend of mine, Joe Donnelly, I went to school with, he started calling me fat hands one day in school when I was about 16, 17, and then just shortened down the hands, and then hands stuck. I don't know how, okay, but stuck. So
Andy asked
the boots and everything in the States.
Andy asked me to ask you to ask him, and he said he didn't know where it came from. Favorite pair of football boots?
Like, that's easy, Menius. I'll just Predator Menius.
And have you always worn them?
They're getting harder to get. Not that I'll be needing any more. I've always worn Predator. Yeah, Menius ideally, and Power Swords if not. It's just a psychological thing. I just couldn't wear anything else now. But to be fair, I don't think the new bits are as good as what the old ones were anyway, to be honest. They're a lot lighter. I don't know, Andy talks about kicking the sidelines with Mark Lane. I don't think you can kick the ball as far with them late boots on, too, to be honest. But no, definitely Adidas Predator.
We've been accused of often having a forwards bias on this podcast with Paddy and Andy. I know they had days in the defence.
And rightly so.
Rightly so. But I would say, Paddy, that you are the epitome of the football pod forward that we'd like to build a team around. When you were growing up, who was your favourite forward in Gaelic football?
Great question.
I had a few, probably, you know, Peter Canavan, Stephen O'Neill, even though you end up playing against him, Colin Cooper, even though you end up playing against him, you know, that year in 2009. I think I would have watched anybody. I just love watching football. Any of the Kerry players, Charlie Redmond, Enda Gormley.
Enda Gormley, yeah.
I was in Derry whenever they won the Ireland in 83. So even that not case, Joe Brawley at that time was out playing. So no, listen, I would have watched it anyway, but probably Colin Cooper, like, just he was probably my favourite of all time, yeah, still now, to be honest.
And how about
said,
a current?
When you said Enda Gormley there, I was thinking, yeah, that suits.
Yeah. How about a current forward still playing?
It's tough one. I suppose Clifford, you know, he obviously probably hasn't fully fulfilled it, not his potential, but he's a long way to go in his career, but he's exciting to watch. And, you know, he's just that typical, he has everything. He's height, he's speed, he's strength, he's right, he's left. Every time you get the ball, you don't know what's going to happen. You know, you expect something to happen out of it. So I'd say Clifford, but probably got a soft spot for, you know, Tyrone being from Ulster and winning the Ireland this year too. Like, I was delighted to see the Dazzler, Darren McCurry, have the year he had, you know.
The two Paddies loving the Dazzler.
Bit of magic. Like, you're loving that, isn't that, like, it's funny when you're playing, you're just such tunnel vision and it's just about grinding. Just, you got to win no matter what. When you step back, and this is my first year kind of as a supporter or kind of watching games without commitment to anyone. So you just want to see magic. You want to see guys expressing themselves. You want to see skills. I don't care about chasing kickouts anymore. I've done that. I don't care anymore. I don't want chasing down wing backs running up trying to be heroes. I want to see dummies. I want to see scores from everyone. You're right, Paddy. You're dead right. And you'll notice that watching games this year, I'd go on and watch Clifford, or go on and watch McCurry, some great moments. And that's what excites people. And you can kind of lose sight of that when you're in it yourself. But you'll notice when you step out, yeah.
Two last quick ones. When did you bin the Derry jersey and become an Antrim? Like, were you a closet Derry fan growing up, or did the second you moved to Belfast, you're like, right, I'm going to wear the Antrim?
It was West Belfast. I'm actually teaching in the school I went to in St Mary's CVS in the Glen Road. So it was a quick transition. Obviously, you come up with a wee Derry accent into the heart of West Belfast and the Falls Road in Andersonstown. So the Saffron jersey was on brave and quick. And to be honest, I always had an affiliation with Antrim anyway. My daddy played for Antrim. And
of course.
Both my mummy and daddy were both from Belfast. So listen, still have a soft spot for Derry. And my brother still lives up there. But I'd like to see him do well, but not too well.
A soft spot is fair enough. And last one for me, and Andy and Paddy might have a quick one then afterwards. Is coaching on the horizon for you?
That was my question. Yeah, good one.
I was late.
I started this podcast on the wrong foot, but I'm ending it on an okay one.
You're phenomenal. What a man, Tommy. You're a pro.
Turn it around. I don't know. Yes, I would say, obviously, I've coached a bit in school and done a few sessions here and there. But I think for now, I'm just going to probably enjoy this year. And you know, when you're, as Paddy says, when you're in that bubble, you're so involved in it. I have a bit of development doing in terms of coaching and management myself, so I think this year for me is going to be a learning year. Big task ahead of me, taking the under-9s in the club. So
that's a hard audience,
I'm telling you, boy. So I have a hard son to look after there too, and Podrick. So he's tortured me to go back and take them this year, so I've promised him to take his team this year. And it's a bit of reflection and see where I go after that, but I definitely wouldn't rule out the future, absolutely.
Enjoy
the year, man.
We used to have Eamon O'Hara in with us, you know, with the club. O'Hara used to come with the nicest boots of all time, you know. He used to, like, out of the attic, a box of Adidas boots coming in. And all the young fellas used to be like, where is he putting these boots on? So when Cunningham goes in now, coaching his first club team, everyone would be like, where is he pulling out these Zidane's from, you know?
Unbelievable.
For the class.
Paddy Cunningham, we've kept you very long this evening, but thank you very much for joining us on the Football Pod of Paddy and Andy. It's been a pleasure having you on. I'd say you were the most mentioned footballer on the podcast for the first 5 or 6 weeks as we were finding our feet. So thanks a million for joining us. Best of luck picking up the hurl next year and coaching Podrick's team. And well done on an unbelievable career with Antrim.
Yeah. Antrim,
good luck, boys. Good to see you.
Enjoy, Paddy. Fair play. Good luck, lads. Enjoy. Take it easy.
Welcome back to the Football Pod of Paddy and Andy. That was Paddy Cunningham. Brilliant stuff. Love listening to Paddy there. It was real forward stream this week's podcast. We had a couple of shout-outs before we got into Paddy about a couple of the players that are retired this week. We mentioned Colin Boyle and we were chatting about Andy's old mucker. We had Owen Callaghan, Cork, Jewel Star for many years. There's also two Carlo footballers who stepped away this year. Andy reminded me there in the break, Paul Broderick and Shane Redmond. Broderick would have been an All-Star nominee back a couple of years ago would have been very, very important in the whole Carlo rising movement when Carlo, they pushed the Dubs quite close that time as well. But an old housemate of mine and a neighbour of Andy Moran's had just retired. I had the pleasure of living with Carl Craig in DCU. Paddy, you were in DCU with Carl Craig as well. I had two Craigs living with me at one stage.
I was in DCU with Craig for a good few years now. We won a Sigerson together in 2010 and we'd had some great nights out. I have to say, a good buddy of mine when I was there, there was a big enough Ross Common contingent himself. Keenan, David Keenan, Downey Shine were there. Craigor wasn't on that minor team in 06 that won the All-Ireland Ross Common, but Shiner and David Keenan were.
Yeah.
So
there was a couple of Roscommon men in the background in DCU pulling a lot of strings back then. There was a heavy Roscommon.
Yeah, they had big influence. Wondering how these boys were getting into Gallagher.
A heavy Roscommon influence.
No, it was great times for Craig. I must give him a shout now. A brilliant player. Jesus, he was very important for us in DCU and obviously what he did with Roscommon.
Yeah.
Lightning quick. He was one of these guys that even as he got older, he still kept his pace, which was always, how was this fella doing?
But he had serious injury troubles as well and he still kept his pace.
Yeah, unbelievable, isn't it?
He kind of studied. He obviously studied in that area. Like, he works for Connacht GAA and I think his expertise is actually the mechanics of running. But Andy, I think you've got the statement open from Western Gales in front of you? They were obviously wishing Carl the best on his retirement.
I have it here. Just seen it come through there. Congratulations, Carl Craig, as he retires from Intercounty Football. So Western Gales man, great club man, good guy. Obviously, Western Gales are neighbouring club to us here. We have a great relationship with them.
They're the Roscommon side of Roscommon, not the Mayo side of Roscommon.
No, they're actually Roscommon, Tommy, you cheeky little. Yeah, but like they're, he's a really, really good guy. Anyone that he bumps into, top man. He works there in the Centre of Excellence in Ballyhornis. So, yeah, he's a great fella.
Yeah.
King of French Park. He used to always be bigging up French Park when he was in DCU. He was the first man. We'd be out on a Thursday night in Queens and Barcall. And Craig would be up first thing Friday morning drive. Couldn't get back to French Park quick enough. He was giving him lip about that. He said I wouldn't last 10 minutes down there. He's probably right.
Oh, I'm telling you, you wouldn't. Go for a night out in French Park.
Yeah, he warned me that enough times now, but I must get down. I still haven't got down 10 years later. Probably for the best.
There's still time. We can add it to the blueprint for next year, Paddy. But all the best to Carl Craig. That's another good man retiring from Intercounty Football this week. So, and apologies if I missed anyone else. There's been a couple of statements coming in, so it's we'll try and give them shout outs as they come in. Massive news this week, and I don't know how I buried the lead, but the championship draw was made for 2022, and we're all very, very excited. I can't even remember who Meath got. I don't know who Dublin got. I haven't a clue what the draw was in Munster, but I do know what the draw was in Connacht and London. In Ryesup, we'll be welcoming Mighty Leitrim next year. Mighty Moran's Leitrim.
He'll be over in London every weekend now with Solum.
That's what I was doing last weekend, though. It's just an hour.
I'd say you're doing some prep in Ryesup there now last weekend, though, right?
So yeah, talk to us. How does the draw come true to you?
Mike Solan was texting me through straight away. So, okay. So we had it just, I was just kind of checking the phone all evening, just making sure it was coming through. But the good, tasty draw. So it's London Leitrim and Mayo Galway on the other side of it. So it's going to be a tough game, either side of it. But it's lovely. It puts a bit of structure on it. So last week we got the FBD games.
Yeah.
We got the league games and you've got the championship games. So you can see the whole year kind of through and you know where you're going to have to progress to. So it's lovely to put that structure on.
It's actually, I was actually looking at the calendar for next year. Don't ask me
what day is that game in London? We must get over for that, Tommy.
Easter Sunday, Paddy. So I think we could organise that, could we?
And it's Easter Sunday, so we go and watch Arsenal on Saturday, have a good night out, and arrive down and support the lads on Sunday. I'll take the warm up, Andy.
We'll do a podcast live from Ryslip that evening.
I think so.
So look, that's exciting, I suppose. Like,
is exciting, Tommy. It is. It definitely puts a bit of. Gets you thinking. And even as a player, I remember looking at it as a player, and then you kind of know where you're going, you know what you're doing.
And
we knew it was our kind of year to go to London in terms of it was if the pandemic didn't kick in, but we weren't 100% sure where to go to reset 2 years and go then. But
yes.
We just kept the same format. So we get to go in April. always a good place to go. And there's a huge Leitrim kind of contingent. I think the Terrace Club in London are originally a Leitrim club and stuff like that. So there's a huge contingent there from Leitrim as well.
And would you have seen much of the Leitrim diaspora when you were over in London last week, or was it solely a Mayo-only event?
No, actually, there was two events. There was one on the Thursday night and one on the Friday night. So there was a few Leitrim boys came down to give me a bit of abuse on Thursday night. So that was...
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, give me a few opinions on players and stuff like that. Yeah, so... It was good crack, and it was good fun. But met a good few and met a... Yeah, a few contacts that we'll tap into when we're over there again.
Brilliant. And I actually got really excited, and I don't know why I did, but your first FBD league game is going to be in the Superdome in Connacht. Have I called it right, the Superdome here in January 4th? The hope is, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you hope it's going to, but like, we're the only organisation in the world that organises an indoor event in the height of the pandemic. So I'm not too sure it'll go ahead, but
yeah,
it'd be unbelievable if
it'd
it
be class.
And it'd be a great way to kind of showcase the... You haven't seen inside this place yet, have you?
No, like,
only images.
It's absolutely incredible. It's in the middle of Mayo, like in the middle of nowhere. It's incredible.
What's the parish? Begins with B, isn't it?
Bacon, yeah.
Bacon.
So Eastern Gales would be around that country, but it's just outside Ballyhonus. And do you know when you go into a place and you find it hard to get blown away by something?
Yeah.
We kind of walked into it for a tour. Craigor showed us around the place, and it was just when you're in it and you're going, how far away is into the... No, you don't realise how big a pitch is until you go inside, like, and it's just huge.
But I was in the National Sports Campus, having the Irish rugby team training there.
Yeah.
And we were in there as well, and you go in and it's big, obviously, but when you're outside, you're kind of thinking, all right, it's grand. And you go in and you're actually on the pitch inside. And it's disconcerting. To play a competitive game, and it would be interesting to see.
Yeah.
And like I say again, if we're talking about trial and things and a bit of development and modernisation around the GAA and things like that, that would be... Geez, there's lots of times, like I say, Andy, I was over in McHale Park and I was thinking, I wish there was a roof on this place. if that goes well, I mean, look, get one in Leinster, get one in Munster. We're spending all the GAA's money. Get Casement Park done first and then get more Superdomes.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
The capacity is around 2,000 for a game, in a normal time, for a game, like, and then for concerts, it's even bigger. Like,
there's a gym in there, there's a running track in there. It's incredible.
Portable sand, yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, look forward now. If I can wrangle my way into that game, I'm gonna try and get up there, because it'll be great to get to. But we'll see what happens.
You
I can't believe I'm talking about GA games in January the 4th.
Remember when you were trying to get me into Croke Park and it was you and Paddy doing the commentary? You couldn't, but I'll use my influence. I'll get you in.
Do you want the real story? Do you want the real story for that? No. You know what? I'm happy I didn't get you into accreditation that day, because you gave us one of the moments of the summer with yourself and Jenny celebrating. So there you go.
I was in tears at the end. The Morris doing the jig over the far side of the pitch.
Lads, that was a great pod.
Yeah, lads, thanks very much for joining us. Do you know what? I think we're going to let the listeners know that we're going to be taking a little break on the football pod. We may be squeezing in a Christmas special if I can get a hold of the lads' schedules. But Paddy's getting married in the next 2 weeks. And Andy, Paddy, like, best of luck. Do you know, I don't know whether we'll FaceTime you or we'll voice note you beforehand, but we want a bit of insight into the wedding of the day. So we'll be in touch.
What could possibly go wrong, lads?
I'll jump inside, Patrick. Restrictions and everything. I hope it goes well, my man.
Yeah. Exciting few weeks ahead. Best of luck in your exams as well.
Thank you. I need more help with that than the wedding, lads. We'll give you a dig out with some of that stuff. That much appreciated. No, we'll be busy, but I'll catch up with you again before that anyway. So.
Definitely. And Andy, you've got a busy few weeks ahead. You've got to get ready for that Superdome clash on the 4th of January.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, getting out on the field and just getting a bit of training done in the next couple of weeks would be lovely.
I'd say it'll feel real tomorrow once you're able to relax after that weekend, because you haven't even settled.
We haven't taken a breath yet today now, but get a good night's sleep tonight.
We'll all sleep tonight.
Recharge, away we go. Well done, lads.
Thanks, boys, and thanks to everyone else for listening in, especially across the whole summer so far. We'll be back for Christmas. Speak to you in a couple of weeks.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.